Nyttårssalget er i gang hos Dressmann. Nå får du opp til 70% rabatt på et stort utvalg skjorter, gensere, bukser og mye, mye mer. Opp til 70% rabatt ved kjøp av to eller flere varer. Salget finner du i butikk og på dressmann.com.
En podcast fra Podplay.
The need from the crowd to hear Alexander the Great through the years.
Yeah.
How did you discuss putting it into the set list? Was it like an argument?
No, we've been teasing it for ages. We said, right now, we've got to do it, finally.
Gammal Miden. Oi, oi, oi. Jeg har sett det her igjen. Og Bruce Dickinson skal ringe meg på Zoom. ikke tro at det en vanesak nå. Gjort det en gang før. Og møtt han face to face en gang før. Og det her blir jeg aldri vant med. Så jeg kjempenervøs. Snakk med gudene sin, det anbefales ingen, men det her skal bli interessant. Jeg har fått lov til å høre hele soloskiva til Bruce nå. Der det mye, mye bra, utrolig mye mørke og heftige tekster og sånt som jeg har lyst til å spørre litt om. Og så det jo Eternity Has Failed, da, som er blitt en Maiden-låt for mange år siden på Book of Souls med en annen titel, If Eternity Should Fail. Det må jeg jo spørre om, for det var vel en sololåt som han ikke har gitt ut før nå, med litt ny tekst. Så aner jeg ikke hvor lang tid jeg har, vi får se. Og så han jo så koselig å prate med, har jeg skjønt, så jeg må bare slutte å drekke kaffe og, og bare, jeg må bare prøve å glede meg, kjenner jeg. Det kanskje like greit.
Let's just crack on.
Yeah.
Cool. Have a good one, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you. So it's okay with you to record this?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, man.
So I'm pushing the button.
Recording in progress.
I guess you have to push.
Oh, yeah, got it.
So, hi there.
Yeah, cool. Happy Christmas and all that stuff.
Thank you. How are you, Bruce?
I'm very well, actually. I'm almost stopped for Christmas. Almost.
Almost.
Two more days of this, and then, you know, like, I wait for the rest of the world to wake up before we carry on.
Congratulations with your new Mandrake project. And you're doing interviews right before Christmas. How does it feel to finally be able to talk about this album?
Well, you know, we've been sitting on this record finished for, you know, not quite a year, but, you know, when we mixed it and everything, and it was earlier this year, to be fair, but I mean, we're thinking, oh my God, it's going to be like almost a year before we get to release this thing. How are we going to stop talking about it? Because we spent 7 years in the build-up to it, going, one day we're going to finish this, and now we finish it. We're going to wait a year before it gets released. It's like, but we managed to fill the time. We're doing a lot of other stuff as well. So I've just finished shooting a second video for it, and I finished that literally a couple of days ago. And then just came back out and had a lie down on a Sunday, and then was kicked into doing more interviews on the Monday. So, but I don't mind it. I mean, it's a great thing that everybody wants to talk to me about the record, because I'm so proud of it. It's such a great album.
It must have been in the oven for some years, because I listened to it and there was one song that I recognized from Iron Maiden, The Book of Souls, but with a small twist in the lyrics.
Yeah,
Eternity has failed now.
Yeah, it has failed. And the reason it has failed, you see, that song, 2014, I wrote that song. And the original idea, that was going to be the title track to the album. If eternity should fail, I kind of borrowed the title from a Doctor Strange comic episode, and I was thinking of doing an actual comic, or like just one issue of a comic to go with the album. So I thought, well, there's got to be a story. So I put a basic story together with these two guys, Dr. Necropolis, Professor Lazarus. One of them wants to bring back his dead sibling from beyond the grave because he'd died at birth, right? And that was the song "Accident of Birth," in fact. So anyway, so I've got all this running around in my mind, and I decided to do the track. And then I thought, well, what would it sound like if the album was a concept album, and therefore you had a narrator? So I put a narration at the end of the track just to see if it sounded totally stupid. It was a pure shot in the dark. It was just a demo. And then the next thing, it ends up on the Iron Maiden record, complete with the narration. I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, people are going, what's he talking about? You know. Anyway, the origin of that song in 2014, and we had a bunch of other tunes as well. So then the next thing after that happened was the album, and then I got throat cancer, and then that was a year getting rid of that, and then it was back like crazy world of Iron Maiden because we had all the catch up to do, and then it was COVID. So. I mean, I was forbidden to go and see Roy. Roy Z, my guitarist, he plays the bass on this album as well. He's my producer, my songwriting partner, everything. Couldn't see him for 3 years. So finally, we get back together. I say, right, we've got to do this. But in the meantime, the one comic that was going to be with the album at the beginning with a very simple story during lockdown, I'd had a lot of time on my hands to think and write. And, that had grown to a 12 issue comic series, basically three books, 12 issues, 34 pages. And that starts on January the 17th. Issue one is out January 17th. And the album has moved away from being a concept album. It's an album, but it is the Mandrake Project. And the comic is also the Mandrake Project. Is there a link between the two? Well, clearly, but you don't need one to listen to the other or read the other. But if you read the comic, you'll find all kinds of links and references that are in the album. You listen to the album, you'll go, oh, that was in the comic. Oh, yeah. So it's not a concept as in, War of the Worlds or something literal like that. But it is, they do inform each other, So it's quite cool. The comic is, as I say, it's a 3 year project. So every 3 months, we're going to have a new issue. Issue one out. It should be going to the printers about now, and issue two is in the works of being drawn and colored and everything. And then, since we get to January, in between doing promo, I'm going to be sitting down with my script writer Tony Lee, and we're going to do the plan for issue three and issue four. I mean, I know what's going to happen. You don't. I do.
Comics, music videos, movies, and of course your songs, and your lyrics. You're a storyteller, and you did it before in Seventh Son of a Seventh Son. You tried making a concept album. Is it difficult to make 10 songs about the same story, the same thing?
I believe it is actually, because at least one or two of them are gonna not. Really stand up to the concept, if you like. I mean, if you with a concept album, you're almost getting into the realm of like musical theater, but with rock groups, and that's not a bad thing, but it's not something that's not a line that I want to cross. Ultimately, rock and roll is all about. If you have a nice window, rock and roll says, let's throw a brick through it, so you need that kind of attitude on the record. That's got to be there. That's got to exist. And sometimes it works with a concept. We've thrown a few little artistic bricks on this record, not in a bad way, but for example, some of the changes that we do on the record, like in Resurrection Men, the beginning of it sounds like the beginning of a Tarantino movie. You know, I mean, it could be on Kill Bill or something. You know, and then all of a sudden it goes into this, like, you know, kind of like AC/DC world, kind of like riff, like Bob. And then right in the middle, totally unexpected, does a complete U-turn, and you're in the land of Geezer, Stoner Rock, and it's the heaviest thing on the record. It was like, oh my God. When I saw Roy playing it, I was like, he was like pulling the strings off the guitar. I was like, Jesus, dude, you know. So you have those moments when you kind of subvert people's expectations, and you do a, you know, everybody's conventional wisdom says, okay, they're coming up to the bit in the song where, okay, everybody turn right. Whoop. No, but the song goes, oh no, they turned left. What are they doing? Are they mad? You know, so there's a few moments on that on the record, which I'm very proud of, and which just sound really cool. You know, we're playing with a sandbox of sound, you know.
Yeah, I can hear a lot of maybe some rain on in one song, and in a couple of songs I feel like I'm inside like a ritual, like maybe there's a shaman playing his drums or something. And
I know that was me doing that. That was
that was you.
egg shakers and little tapping little bits of wood and things. That's at the beginning of Eternity Has Failed. So back to your question. Yeah, Eternity Has Failed. I changed the words because now I had this great long story with characters fleshed out and the whole backstory. So I thought, well, now I've got that. That's a really good time to incorporate that maybe in this song. And that differentiates it, you know, even more from the Maiden version. I mean, the Maiden version's good, but this version is just takes a slightly different approach. It's a different groove. I say that for sure. It's a slightly different groove. You know, it's more a bit more doomy. It's a bit more heaven and helly. And of course, we've got a keyboard player in there as well, and he's amazing, mysterious. So that just adds another dimension.
And I also feel certain kind of darkness in the lyrics and in the music. Where did you get that from the last 7 years?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, things happen in your life, but I actually didn't think that having the whole cancer thing changed my view of like life and death at all. Afterwards I said, well, no, everything was just fine. Oh, it was just a bad cold, you know. I mean, yeah, like hell, you know. So with a bit of a few years of hindsight, and a few more of my friends, associates, friends of friends dying, you know, some at quite an early age of various things, some of them entirely random and some of them entirely unfair, I did get to to thinking about, you know, the whole thing about life and death. And I think a lot of that probably came through into the story, but it's not just enough to be dark and doomy. You actually have to have a story, you know, beginning, middle, end, and you can only have darkness if there's light somewhere. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can't describe darkness without saying darkness is where there is no light. Oh, there's light. Well, what does light look like? You know, so you have to do both, you know. And I think that's the key to making a record just uplifting, dark but uplifting, as opposed to just dark and miserable.
correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't seem like a very religious guy, but you're still really, really interested in mythology. You even have Ragnarok in there, Norse mythology.
Yeah, yeah,
where did that come from?
That just comes from ever since I was a kid, I was fascinated by by religion, by the kind of, but partly by the ritual of it, but also by the astonishing arrogance of it, you know, and how all these people, in all religions all around the world, you know, almost blindly follow, you know, whatever particular doctrine it is, no matter how crazy or how, you know, absurd it might seem, because people have a need to, they have a need to belong, they have a need to for certainty, they have a need for comfort, because, you know, the world's a dangerous and scary place. And I understand that. And of course, the stories that go along with all those various religions are fascinating, because they are stories of human frailty, and they're stories of human conquest and tragedy and all that stuff. So they're brilliant bits of drama to incorporate. But am I religious? Not in the slightest. No, because I actually, and despite the fact that I use a lot of religious imagery and things like that, and stories and things like that, to me, they're stories. It's icons. Do I believe in some kind of power in the universe? Well, not a guy with a big long white beard. If there is a power, it's science. And if science, but I'll qualify that by saying that go to the end of science, go to the end of the universe, which is also the beginning of the universe, and you arrive at a place where nobody knows what's going on. And a place where nobody knows what's going on, maybe that's God. So, yeah. So in the world of quantum craziness, the only thing that approaches making sense of the universe is poetry.
Like they said, 5,000? No, what was it? 500 before Christ? Yeah,
I mean, yeah. the mystics. Of all descriptions, yeah, have known about the quantum universe for years, but they just didn't put it in terms that scientists would accept.
So, but like you say, the world is scary, it's dangerous, but I think it's even more scary to tell the kids that they may go to hell if they do the wrong things. And I recently had a guest in my podcast that he grew up in, I think it's called Pentecostal.
Oh, Pentecostal. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And
yeah,
he got some rock cassettes, Rat, and a lot of bands. And then he heard your lyrics with Iron Maiden, and then he wanted to break out of it. And now he's a rocker and he's in a band. And I think that must be the reason to make rock music.
Well, I think it's quite a good reason to make rock music. I mean, if you can break people out of some weird cult, not that Pentecostalism is a weird cult, but I think that a lot of religions have got some pretty weird cults associated with them. Christianity is one of them, obviously, and there are other ones. I mean, you know, it's not like Islam is like one homogenous religion. There's all kinds of different, and they've got their heretics and their this and that, so all of them have got different side things. I mean, the ones that fascinate me are not the ones that follow the standard doctrines. It's the outliers. It's the people that effectively say, well, I've seen God, you know, I know what it's all about, you know. They're the interesting ones, because you know what, they may have had an experience in which they've seen some kind of revelation, had some insight, but they're not the only people. But those are far more interesting than the corporate religions. But the corporate religions are what keep people in power, you know.
Mm-hmm. So now I'm really curious about the Mandrake project. We know the Mandrake from Harry Potter. We know in Norwegian we call it Allrune. A lot of people I don't know if they ate it, but I think it's poisonous and you get trippy and sick.
What's the concept? That's the first video. The first video is Necropolis drinking Mandrake potion, and he has a trip, and that's the video. And at the end of it all, it turns out that actually he's died during the trip, and his partner comes back in and gets the paddles on him and brings him back. Because that's what, if you take too much Mandrake potion, you will die, you know. So it is a risky and dangerous plant, which has those effects, like psychotropic effects. It goes all the way back to the Bible. I mean, I think who is it? Rachel seduces the partner of her sister using mandrake plants, which her sister said, you stole those from my brother. You stole his mandrake plants and used them to seduce my boyfriend. You know, so that goes back to the Bible. Yes, Harry Potter, because the mandrake looks superficially like a human being when you pull it out of the ground. That's why the belief, and also that's why it was associated with occult ritual and things like that. And there were all kinds of bizarre things that you pulled a mandrake out, it was supposed to emit a scream, and that would immediately kill any human being who pulled it out of the ground. So there was this elaborate thing whereby people had to wear earplugs and tie a dog's tail to the mandrake plant, give the dog a kick. The dog pulled the mandrake, so the dog died. But the human being had the mandrake, and off he goes to go and raise the spirit of somebody, you know, or whatever with it. So all these weird and wonderful stories and lore, but the Mandrake Project was chosen as a title about 100 years before, almost 100 years before the comic takes place. And it was chosen for a reason, because it was an elusive title. It was like, well, what's all this about? That's the first thing you go, what is the Mandrake? First thing you ask, what is the Mandrake Project? Which is a great entree into, well, open the book. Once upon a time, you know. The title was actually, I had the story and the characters and the album, all of it before the title. I thought, what the hell are we going to call this thing? And I had a page of really stupid titles, and I just kept writing more and more stupid titles until I just came up with the word mandrake. I thought, let me have a Google of that. What is there in there that's also called? And there was a French comic called Mandrake Magician. There was obviously Harry Potter. But I thought, no, actually, that as a specific project, I think there was one, some little band had done like a drum and bass thing, you know, donkeys years ago. And there was a club, you know. I was originally going to call it the Mandrake Club. But I think the Mandrake Project sounds better. It sounds a bit sci-fi as well, which of course it is, you know, which you'll discover when you get to the comic.
You got my curiosity there, because I grew up with the comic you mentioned there from France.
Magician. Mandrake the Magician. Comics are big in France, you know, so I have to explain that away, you know. And I'm also going to have to explain away one of the characters in the comic who is called Kelly. And the Kelly family, of course, the Kelly family is this huge, like, show band in Germany. You know, they're going to go, oh, that's the Kelly family in his in his album. Said, not quite.
Nyttårssalget er i gang hos Dressmann. Nå får du opp til 70% rabatt på et stort utvalg skjorter, gensere, bukser og mye, mye mer. Opp til 70% rabatt ved kjøp av to eller flere varer. Salget finner du i butikk og på dressmann.com.
You're listening to a podcast. I'm Bruce Dickinson. You're not. And you're listening to Gamal Maiden.
Is it okay if I... in the end, I'll ask you, I got this regular questions in my podcast. And
yeah, go ahead.
Last time we spoke about your first time seeing Iron Maiden, or you played with with Samson then. But can you remember the moment in your childhood or whatever, the music or the band, what sparked your interest in rock music and wanting to make that yourself? Do you remember that moment that happened?
Well, yeah, there were two moments, really. One was when I saw the first band I ever saw was actually at my boarding school, because they had bands at my boarding school, which is really weird. We had a very enlightened art teacher, you know, and I think he used to go into the woods and smoke funny cigarettes as well. But in the meantime, he was promoting all these bands. So we had at one point, I mean, I think we had early version of Genesis there, played the school. Queen were going to play, but they suddenly got very big and went over for us. First band I ever saw was a band called Wild Turkey, which was Glenn Cornick from Jethro Tull, and an amazing band. And they did two or three albums. They did a great album called Battle Hymn. So that was the first band I ever saw, and I was like 15 or something like that, high as a kite on, like, you know, Fanta and Mars bars. You know, I was maybe even younger than that. Might be 14. Anyway, so I saw them. Wow. And then the next thing was, I was walking past somebody's like room in the house where we lived in this boarding school. And there was Deep Purple and Rock was coming through the door. And I thought, oh my God, that sounds amazing. Knocked on the door, said, "Who the hell is that?" You know, and he said, "Deep Purple and Rock." Now, piss off, you know. So, so because I was like a little shrimp, and he was like, "Oh, big boy." So, I bought a copy. There was people used to sell their stuff, you know, if they were short of money, they would sell albums and stuff. And so, I bought one for 50 pence. What's that, like half a euro? Yeah.
So I guess a lot of guests coming in here got it from their parents, like, yeah, my father listened to Black Sabbath, but I guess your parents didn't listen to that of music.
No, my parents didn't really listen to music. I mean, they had the radio on. It was just like, you know, like Petula Clark or something like that, you know. It was just you know, my life was full of downtown, da, 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 downtown. I mean, that was it. It was horrendous. So there's no musical instruments lying around the house. No drums. There was one terrible guitar that was unplayable. I don't know why it was there. I think Dad had a beatnik phase at one point when he was in his youth. And the only records that were available were like Nat King Cole and actually, funnily enough, Frankie Lane was there, who I thought was, like, at the time I thought was silly, but now I recognize he's actually a bit of a genius. You know, 3:10 to Yuma, one of the greatest, you know, soundtrack songs ever, you know. So that was it. And there was no real musical background, but we did live at a hotel. We stayed in a hotel because we ran this guest house hotel stuff, you know. And I lived down in the basement. That was my bedroom, was down there, me and Joseph Fritzl. And so we we went up. We had a band would come and stay, you know, because they were like a show band. And they'd had a minor hit with a track called Jezebel, I think it was. And they were called The Casuals. And that you can find pictures of them. And they had this big Mercedes bus. And I thought, oh, that's so cool, you know. And the guy had an electric guitar. I think it was Telecaster. No, it was a Stratocaster. And I'd never seen one before. I never touched a real proper guitar before. And he came in and showed me how it worked. And then I thought, wow, they're kind of cool, you know. But I didn't get the chance to do anything about it until I went to school and saw what a rock and roll band actually looked like. And I thought, I want to be a drummer. But I was a terrible drummer. So I better being a singer, really.
Okay, two more minutes. I just want to tell you I'm looking forward to seeing your concert in Oslo in June. And
oh yeah, it's sold out. It's sold out so fast. It's crazy. I mean,
it's Norway. I'm like,
it isn't there anywhere bigger?
It is. It is. You know, so you should actually move that concert to another venue, maybe next time. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, next time. Yeah, and there will be a next time. Believe me. You know. I mean, we're only getting started on. Obviously, we're going to be playing this album, but also it's been a while, so we've got to do stuff from Accident of Birth. We're going to do Chemical Wedding. We've got to do all of those things, you know. So it should be a great night. What a great band as well, honestly. God, what a band. I mean, you know, the Mysteria on keyboards, Roy Z on bass, Dave on the drums, I mean, and Tanya on bass. Wow.
It must be fun. You're singing so good nowadays. I saw you in Bergen, and I must ask, you guys must have felt like the need from the crowd to hear Alexander the Great through the years.
How
did you discuss putting it into the set list? Was it like an argument?
No, we've been teasing it for ages. We said, right, now we got to do it. Finally, we got to do it. And then the thing was, the only thing that was a bit of a worry was Adrian was like, I'm not sure I can remember how to do the bit at the beginning, the solo, you know. But it is cracking, honestly. And I was a bit nervous about it as well, because I was like, God, that's an awful lot of words crammed into a, you know.
Must be really difficult to sing it.
Yeah. It's not quite as bad as He's the Quizzits Hadarach, He's Born of Caladan and Will Take the Gom Jabbar, you know. But not getting there, you know. But actually, when we did it, I was like, "Wow, this is really cool," you know. So I love it. I absolutely love that track. Brilliant highlight, you know.
A lot of us cried there in Bergen, and your intro with the Blade Runner music, and I cracked.
It's a great tour. I'm doing 4 months of it later on next year as well. So it's great.
I know. When I'm,
you know, but Australia, New Zealand, Japan, yay! You know.
But now you're going to smaller venues with Roy C. I guess you're bringing him and the band. So you must be. Like Steve Harris, you must be fond of doing both, like huge arenas and the small crap place.
Yeah, although I have to say that the arenas, I mean, the places we're playing, some of them are getting quite. I mean, Norway is actually one of the smallest venues, and you know they're all 18,000, 2,000. I mean, the England ones we're having to move because it's all sold out. You know, so. Some of the places we're playing, headlining are like, you know, 4,500 people. In Brazil, it's 8,000. And in Mexico, it's 8,000 people as well. So we're headlining some festivals as well. You know, so we're special guesting on some festivals, but some we're actually headlining. So anyway, listen, I've got to go.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the chat. And good luck with the album and everything. So Yeah,
we'll see you again. I'm sure.
I guess so.
Have a great Christmas.
A great Christmas. Bye bye.
Gammal Maiden med Torkel Torsvik, en podcast fra Radio Rock.
Oi. Det gikk jo som bare juling. Fy flate for en koselig kær. Men nå kommer pulsen. Nå må jeg ha med en snus og en kaffe. Håper du koset deg. Det gjorde I hvert fall jeg. Begynner å bli dus med fyren nå, vet du. Begynner å bli dus. Nei.
Du har hørt en podcast fra Podplay. En enklere måte å høre podcast på. Last ned appen Podplay, eller se podplay.no.
Have a great Christmas!
Nyttårssalget I gang hos Dressmann. Nå får du opp til 70% rabatt på et stort utvalg skjorter. skjorter, gensere, bukser og mye, mye mer. Opp til 70% rabatt ved kjøp av to eller flere varer. Salget finner du I butikk og på dressmann.com.